Audio on demand from Vision Christian Media.
Some people come to the Lord because they have no one else to turn to after years of prideful living. Maybe you know one of those believers. Maybe you are one. Today on Turning Point, Dr. David Jeremiah considers one of the Bible's most dramatic examples of that transformation in the life of King Nebuchadnezzar. Listen as David introduces his powerful and moving message, A Proud King's Conversion.
Well, you know, every once in a while you know somebody or you meet somebody who came to Christ out of a very sordid background, maybe somebody who you would never think would ever become a Christian. Well, if there was ever somebody you would think would never come to God, it would be Nebuchadnezzar, one of the most wicked pagan kings whose record is recorded in the Bible. He was cruel. He was a tyrant. He was everything you can think of when you think of a dictator and his cruelty. But God got a hold of his heart. And the story of what happened is here in the fourth chapter. In fact, the entire fourth chapter tells the story of Nebuchadnezzar and how God got a hold of his heart. Well, it's time to get back to the book of Daniel. Here's Daniel chapter 4 and part 1 of A Proud King's Conversion.
Now, the fourth chapter of Daniel is about pride and how God deals with it. You will never find a better, more graphic picture than in this chapter. In this chapter, we're going to say goodbye to a friend, good old King Nebuchadnezzar. Remember when we started out with him? He's got to be one of the most fascinating personalities in all of the Old Testament. And yet we won't hear from him anymore. We're going to see him in his last picture in the Bible. The fourth chapter of Daniel, by way of introduction, is a very unique portion of the Word of God. For it is a Babylonian state document written by Nebuchadnezzar, of all people. Notice in the first verse, Nebuchadnezzar is addressing Nebuchadnezzar the king unto all the people, nations and languages that dwell in all the earth. Peace be multiplied unto you. I thought it good. He's talking himself. Apart from several verses that interpret what Nebuchadnezzar says, here is Nebuchadnezzar's own personal written testimony of what God did in his life. And Daniel incorporates it under the Spirit of God into the book which bears Daniel's name. If I could tell you in simple terms what the fourth chapter is, I would say it is a gospel tract. It is Nebuchadnezzar's testimony to how God took him from where he was to where he wanted him to be. And Nebuchadnezzar tells it in his own language, very graphically, just exactly how God dealt with him. You see, in chapters 2 and 3, we might get the impression that Nebuchadnezzar was warm to spiritual things because there are a couple of times when he tips his hat to God, remember? Well, when God gets done with him in the fourth chapter, he won't just tip his hat, he'll get on his knees and exalt the God of heaven. He'll be like Thomas in the New Testament, who, when finally confronted with the real, live, risen Christ, cried out in faith believing, "My Lord and my God." Now let's review what God's done in Nebuchadnezzar's life. In the second chapter of the book of Daniel, God showed him through Daniel that he was the head of gold in the image which was in his dream. Remember? But God also warned Nebuchadnezzar by telling him that that image, which represented the kingdoms of this world, was only going to exist for a short time, that it would fall, and that his kingdom would be taken over by a kingdom of lesser value. So Nebuchadnezzar had his first warning in the image that God interpreted to him. Then you get to the third chapter, and remember when we were studying the fiery furnace, we pointed out that Nebuchadnezzar saw God in the fire. Because he saw how God was dealing with those three Hebrew children. And once again, God was dealing with Nebuchadnezzar, trying to confront him with the truth. And once again, Nebuchadnezzar tips his hat to God, but he never really truly repents. Someone has said if in chapter 2, God dealt with Nebuchadnezzar straightly, in chapter 3, he dealt with him sternly, and in chapter 4, he deals with him severely. Let's follow this outline as we study the text together. First of all, verses 1 through 3, the reason for this story. The reason for this story. Nebuchadnezzar tells us the reason. In verses 1 through 3, if this is a state document, would be like the preamble to the state document. It is Nebuchadnezzar's introduction to what's going to happen. And let's read it together. Nebuchadnezzar the king, unto all the people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God hath wrought toward me. This is what he's going to do. How great are his signs and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom and his dominion is from generation to generation. That's the introduction. That's Nebuchadnezzar saying, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to show you how God dealt with me. Now I want you to just notice two or three things about this introduction. First of all, this is a universal declaration. Nebuchadnezzar in verse 1 says that this testimony is to all people and all nations and all languages that dwell in the earth. Here is this monarch at the peak of his popularity and of his reign, and he is now making a statement, a universal testimony, if you will. In my library, I have a commentary on the book of Daniel written by G.H. Lang, and in this commentary, he makes a very interesting statement. He says that about every 500 years, God makes a statement to the whole universe. And he goes back in history and very interestingly documents this fact. He says, the first statement that he made to the whole world was the universal flood. And about 500 years later, he decided to make another statement with the Tower of Babel. And it wasn't long after that that Sodom and Gomorrah were burned down. And you may not think that was a statement to the whole world, but if you know how Sodom and Gomorrah were strategically located, almost everyone who traveled had to come through those parts. And so the word about God's dealing with Sodom and Gomorrah spread quickly throughout the whole world. It wasn't long after that that God spoke to the whole world through the Exodus. In fact, if you read the book of Exodus chapter 9 and 16, you will read there that what God was doing when the children of Israel were extricated from Egypt was he was telling the whole world that Jehovah is God. That was a universal statement, if you will. About 500 years later, God makes a statement through Solomon that all the earth came to inquire of Solomon concerning his wisdom and his wealth. And God made a statement to the whole world. And now he's about to make another one through King Nebuchadnezzar. He's going to take the most powerful figure in all of the world at the zenith of his power, and he's going to bring him down as low as a man can be. For all the world to see and for all of us to hear. It was a universal declaration. I want you to notice, secondly, under the reason for this story, that Nebuchadnezzar is not only making a universal statement, but he's making a personal statement. Notice verse 2. He said, I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God hath wrought toward me. He's not talking about what God did in somebody else's life or what he remembers in the experience of his youth. But he's saying, as I review now what God has done toward me, I thought it was good to put that down in paper and tell you what he's done. It's a pretty good thing to do, isn't it? Let the redeemed of the Lord say so. Nebuchadnezzar did a whole lot more with his light than most of us have done with ours. It was a personal statement. Now, notice, thirdly, I think it was enthusiastic. I've been accused on occasion of being enthusiastic. I believe that from the Word of God, we have a good pattern for that. Notice verse 3, Nebuchadnezzar's statement. I can't imagine him telling this in a dry, dull monotone. He said, I want to tell the whole world personally what God has done and how great are his signs and how mighty are his wonders. And his kingdom is an everlasting kingdom and his dominion from generation to generation. That's what I want to say in what I write in this chapter. So that's the reason for his story, to tell the whole world what God has done for him. Isn't it good that God has given us an opportunity to tell the whole world what he's done for us? The reason for the story. Now let's go to Roman numeral number 2, verses 4 through 9, the reception of the dream. And in verses 4 through 9, we read, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in mine house and flourishing in my palace, and I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore made I a decree to bring in all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known unto me the interpretation of the dream. Then came in the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers, and I told the dream to them, but they did not make known unto me its interpretation. But at the last, Daniel came in before me, whose name is Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, and in whom the spirit of the holy gods is. And to him I told the dream, saying, O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, and no secret troubleth thee, tell me the visions of my dream that I have seen, and the interpretation of it. Now, the reception of the dream. Once again, Nebuchadnezzar's writing in the first person. He says that he was in his palace at rest, and he was flourishing. It means that he was not necessarily reclining or recovering from fatigue, but to be at rest meant that all was well in the kingdom. He was not at war. There were no battles being fought. He had subdued all of his enemies, and he was at rest, and he was prosperous in his kingdom. And at the height of his prosperity, he had a dream, and the dream troubled him. Someone has said it's difficult to be prosperous without being proud. I can show you hundreds of Christian people I know who have succeeded in the Christian life in poverty. It's not always easy to find that many who have been blessed with wealth who you could consider successful. He was prosperous, he was proud, and he was troubled. Now, he does a very strange thing when he's troubled with his dream. He calls in the Chaldeans. And if you've been with us through this study, you ought to certainly recognize why that's a strange thing, because he's called on those fellas every time he's been in trouble, and they are batting zero. They have not helped him once. They have struck out every single time he's called on them. And you would have thought that Nebuchadnezzar would have learned his lesson. And he just, hey, look, I'm not going to waste time with you guys anymore, because every time I call on you, you never know the answer. And then it's interesting in the text, verse 8. But at the last, Daniel came in. Now, that's the way we do it. After we've exhausted all of the human possibilities that there are, we finally do the thing we should have done first, at the last. And so Daniel comes in. I want you to notice something about Daniel. I never saw this before in this chapter, but it's really thrilling. There was something about Daniel that caused Nebuchadnezzar to keep knocking on his door when he got to the end of himself. And it's mentioned in this chapter three times. And I want you to notice verse 8. According to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. That's about Daniel. Verse 9. O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee. Verse 18. For the spirit of the holy gods is in thee. In the truest sense of the Old Testament, Daniel was a spirit-filled man. And Nebuchadnezzar didn't know how to describe that in any other way except in his own terminology, and that was that the spirit of the holy gods was in Daniel. He was different. There was an aura about Daniel, and over the 30 years that they had been together, King Nebuchadnezzar, whenever he was around him, he knew there was something about that man. And the best way he could put it was in this phrase, he was filled with the spirit of the holy gods. Could I say something by way of practical application to all of us here together? Those of you who work out in the secular domain, out in the business world, inevitably because of your faith, you are going to be criticized and ridiculed. You're going to be put down and you'll have people make fun of you. But I've learned something. I worked in the world a long time before I became a pastor, working my way through school. And they ridiculed me and called me preacher boy and all of that. But as soon as one of those fellas got in trouble, they came to the truck I was working in because they wanted to talk to me. They knew the guys they swore with, caroused with, drank with, didn't have any answers. But there was something different in my life, and they wanted some help. And I want to tell you something. If you let the Spirit of God dwell in you, and you're a spirit-filled person, it won't be long before somebody be knocking on your door. They'll see the difference, and they'll want some help. Roman numeral number 3, the repetition of the dream, verses 10 through 18. Daniel's now in the king's palace, and the king is about to tell Daniel what his dream was, and this is his dream. O Belteshazzar, These were the visions of mine head in my bed. I saw and behold a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height of it was great. And the tree grew and was strong, and its height reached unto heaven, and the sight of it to the end of all the earth. Its leaves were fair, and its fruit much, and it was food for all. And the beasts of the field had shadow under it, and the fowls of the heavens dwelt in its boughs, and all flesh was fed from it. I saw in the vision of my head upon my bed, and behold, a watcher and an holy one came down from heaven, and cried aloud, and said thus, Hew down the tree, and cut off its branches, shake off its leaves, scatter its fruit, let the beast get away from under it, and the fowls from its branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump of its roots in the earth, even with a band of iron and bronze, and tender grass of the field, and let him be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts of the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. This matter is by the decree of the watchers and the demand of the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the basest of men. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now thou, O Belteshazzar, declare the interpretation of it. Forasmuch as all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known unto me the interpretation, but thou art able, for the spirit of the holy gods is in thee. Now, this is quite a dream, isn't it? If you dreamed that, you might be afraid too. Have you ever dreamed of a tree so big that it reached from the earth and it filled the whole heavens? A tree so gigantic that every place you were in the whole world, you could see the tree from wherever you were. A tree that was so gigantic that the fruit of it fed the whole world. And all of the beasts of all of the fields were under its branches, and all of the fowls of all of the air were in its boughs. There were two parts of this dream that frightened Nebuchadnezzar. First of all, the magnificent tree. And the tree, according to Nebuchadnezzar's dream, was in the middle of the earth. It was strong. Its height was unto the heavens. It was seen by the whole earth. Its leaves were fair. It contained much fruit. The beasts were under it. The birds were in it. And all flesh fed from it. The magnificent tree, verses 10 through 12. But added to that was a mandate from heaven, verses 13 to 18. Verse 13 says, I saw in the visions of my head upon my bed, and a watcher and a holy one came down from heaven. Now, who's that? The watcher and the holy one is simply the Chaldean way of talking about an angel. It's not two people, but it's one person described in two ways. He was a watcher and a holy one. And Nebuchadnezzar wasn't too used to dealing with heaven, but this angel came down from heaven with a decree, with a mandate. Notice verse 17. This matter is by the decree of the watchers and the demand by the Holy One. And verse 24 in the interpretation, Daniel says, O king, this is the decree of the Most High. So the angel is a representation of God, and the angel comes down from heaven with a word from God, and this is the word. The angel says, this huge, gigantic tree is going to be cut down. And the description of it is replete. It's going to be cut down, and all the branches are going to go down, and all of the birds are going to fly away from the tree, and all the beasts are going to be taken out from under. And the only thing that's going to be left of this gigantic tree is a little stump left in the ground, surrounded by an iron band. Notice in verse 15, there's a very strategic change in pronouns. Nevertheless, leave the stump of its roots in the earth, even with a band of iron and bronze in the tender grass of the field, and let what? Him. A tree isn't a him. But here we are now moving gradually toward the interpretation of the dream. We've moved away just a little bit from the tree now, and let him be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts in the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him. Let seven times pass over him. What are the seven times? Seven times here are simply a reference to 7 years. In the book of Daniel, you will find the word times used for years. When we're talking about the first half of the tribulation period, later on in the book of Daniel, they call it a time and times and half a time. How long is the tribulation period? 7 years. And so how many years is half of it? A time, that's one, and times, that's two, and half a time is a half. One and two is three, and a half is three and a half. So time is a reference to the year. And this is a prophecy that this thing that's going to happen in this dream is going to happen over a period of 7 years. Seven times shall pass over it. 7 years shall go by. And that's the dream. Now we come to the revelation of the dream in verses 19 through 27. We're moving right along. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was perplexed for 1 hour, and his thoughts troubled him. Now I want you to notice that when it says Daniel was perplexed, it doesn't mean that he didn't know what to do. It doesn't mean that he didn't know what the dream meant. When the scripture says he was perplexed, it simply means that he was troubled in his spirit. Listen, people, Daniel had been with Nebuchadnezzar for 30 long years, and the evidence of the text is that he had come to love that man with all of his heart. And here God had revealed to him a tragic, terrible dream concerning the future of his friend Nebuchadnezzar. And as Daniel wrestled with that dream in his heart, he didn't want to tell Nebuchadnezzar what he had learned. Notice what he says. King spoke and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or its interpretation trouble thee. And Daniel answered and said, my Lord, paraphrasing this, my Lord, I wish this dream was about those who hate you and the interpretation of it about your enemies. You see what's happening in Daniel's heart? He knows what God is going to do with his friend Nebuchadnezzar, and it's just tearing him up to tell him the truth. Daniel gives to us here a beautiful pattern of how to preach the judgment of God to people. It's to be done with a broken heart. It's to be done with a heart of concern, with a troubled countenance. Point out their sin, yes, but always in mercy. Daniel had a compassionate heart, and when it came time to tell the awful story of what was going to happen to this king, he could hardly bring himself to do it.
Well, we'll have the rest of Daniel 4 tomorrow here on Turning Point, and then on Thursday and Friday, one of the amazing stories in the book of Daniel, and it's the signature lesson for this whole series. It's the handwriting on the wall. What happened in that banquet hall that night when a hand wrote a message on the wall? Tomorrow, it's the end of a proud king's conversion. Thursday and Friday, the handwriting on the wall. Hey, we have a magazine that we love, and we are so excited. We have several hundred thousand people now that are getting this magazine every month. It's called Turning Points Magazine and Devotional. It's written in such a beautiful way. It carries you through the month with a devotional column for every day of the month, Monday through Friday, and one for the weekend. There's all kinds of articles in there about what God is doing through Turning Point, what he wants to do in your life. Some very wonderful things in this magazine, and we'd love to send it to you. If you haven't ever received this magazine, you'd like to have the next copy, all you have to do is let us know. Go to our website and let us know. Call us, let us know. Send us a note and let us know, and we'll send this to you. And by the way, you can download all of these devotions electronically and have them with you everywhere you go. That's absolutely free. Find out about it today. We'll see you tomorrow.
For more information on Dr. Jeremiah's series, The Handwriting on the Wall, please visit our website, davidjeremiah.org/radio, where we offer two free ways to help you stay connected, our monthly magazine, Turning Points, and our daily email devotional. Sign up today at davidjeremiah.org/radio. That's davidjeremiah.org/radio. Ask for a copy of David's companion book for this series on the secrets of the prophecies of Daniel, The Handwriting on the Wall. It's yours for a gift of any amount. You can also purchase the Jeremiah Study Bible in the English Standard Version and New International Version, as well as in standard or large print in the New King James, all available in your choice of handsome cover options. Go to davidjeremiah.org/radio for all the details. Join us tomorrow as we continue the series, The Handwriting on the Wall, here on Turning Point with Dr. David Jeremiah.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.